Welcome to the InSync Insurance Podcast, where we have a very special 50th episode for you today. This week I'm joined by Fiona Maxgill, founder of UDU Business Coaching, Rian Dorr, founder of Sunshine Training and Equipment, and finally Victoria Walker, clinic owner at Gibraltar Medispa. In this very special episode, we chat about the future of aesthetics, with all three guests discussing problems practitioners face today, in the future, and what can be done to future-proof your career. If you enjoy our podcast, make sure to leave a rating on your favourite podcast directory.
So welcome and thank you guys so much for coming on today. This is an amazing 50th special and I'm so honoured to have you all here.
Thank you for having me.
That's okay. So obviously, the audience won't know, but you guys are quite established experts in your relative fields. We'll introduce you guys in just a moment, but we are going to be talking about the future of aesthetics today. Now, obviously, it's still very uncertain. We've got no official kind of talk from the government of what's going to happen, what specific regulations, stuff like that. So obviously, a lot of it is speculation. So we can only guess technically, but the idea being that we're going to chat about it, get a good feel for it, but also, you know, what can steps people can eventually take to hopefully at least future-proof their careers when the government does take a stance or if they release whatever they're going to release. So if I start off, we have Rian with us today. If you introduce yourself and who you are and what you are a part of.
Hiya everyone, so I'm Rian Dorr. You might also know me as Rian Knowles because that's kind of what everyone knows me in the industry as. I am currently the owner of Sunshine, so with under the Sunshine umbrella we have Sunshine Training, Sunshine Academy startups, and we also have accreditation, factoring in from kind of like the hair, beauty, nails and aesthetic side, so we kind of cover everything as well as teaching qualifications as well.
Brilliant, thanks so much. Next, if we have Victoria.
Hi, so I am the owner of the International Aesthetics Awards. I also own a clinic in Gibraltar and my training company is in the UK. It once was one of the biggest in the UK until I made the jump to move overseas. So it's a lot more low scale now, so I don't have to fly back to the cold weather as much.
Honestly, don't blame me there. And then finally, we have Fiona with us.
I'm a business coach in the aesthetics industry. I work with injectors and I work with great skincare therapists, and I just help them either start their businesses properly and kind of run them for a period of time, or I work with businesses who are ready to kind of leap off the platform and go for that next section of growth. So sometimes I run kind of long-term courses over 6 months, and sometimes it's kind of one-to-one coaching to help them jump over the edge. But ultimately it's all about kind of business and marketing. Don't style myself as a marketing expert. I know a lot about marketing, but there are great marketeers out there. My fundamental is get your business running, that marketing is part of it, but then you go on from there.
Absolutely brilliant. So one of the key questions that we're focusing on today, and you know, obviously we could probably talk days and days about this, is you know, what do you think are the current issues that people are facing within the industry? Rian, if we start off with you.
So from my kind of experience and from where people are approaching me kind of like on a daily basis, my biggest thing would be there's a lot of speculation. That's one of the biggest issues within the industry. And also the kind of uncertainty where people are kind of misleading people. And also because no one knows, no one has a crystal ball, I personally don't think people should be jumping on courses left, right and centre because we don't know what's going to happen. The other thing that from my kind of perspective as being involved in training but also like the accreditation side would be the amount of companies or academies out there that aren't actually accredited and pose to be accredited. I feel like that could be another subject later on down the line, a whole new podcast. But that would be kind of where I'm at with that. You know, and it's the marketing around the issues as well. So people will say become an aesthetic practitioner and you'll earn this much money a year. I speak to thousands of people that are practitioners, very good at what they do, and they don't make anywhere near that much. So I think And that's not just within the aesthetics industry, it's in the whole industry, beauty, everything. So I think that's kind of where the issues lie within the aesthetics industry.
Yeah, it definitely does seem to be there's like a lot of misinformation, or, you know, some people do unfortunately be like, you know, you definitely will be insured after taking our course. And it's like, yeah, but are they actually going to be able to get insurance after that course as well? So one of the things that we did cover previously was, you know, about how we need to look at courses, you know, what do they hold? Who are they accredited by? You know, what kind of, you know, stability they have with that, because, you know, some training courses could actually be really terrible for you and make you feel not that qualified when you do come out into the industry. So that is a very key thing I think everyone's been seeing.
I mean, the thing to point onto that, to add on to that, it was going to be covered in one of the other criteria, but it would be always do your due diligence as a student or as a practitioner to ensure that the person that's going to be delivering that training has actually got the correct amount of knowledge and experience to be able to deliver the training. You know, don't be afraid to ask them for insurance and, you know, their CPD log and stuff like that, because every trainer knows that that's what you need to have, sort of thing. So yeah, that would be my take on that.
Definitely. So Victoria, what's your take on, you know, what are the current issues in the industry?
I think we see, especially on Facebook groups, practitioners are getting so much flack, and I think the problem stems from way higher up than the practitioners, malpractice or misunderstanding or cutting corners. It all starts for me with training providers. If people are taught correctly, there's not going to be that room for error. People are not going to be going around thinking that Botulax is completely fine to use. They're not going to be questioning where they should inject, how they should map a face for certain treatments. But also, along with that, being a training provider for so long, I was obviously accredited and accredited by different companies, and what they require was so different. I had a company that had passed it within the day, and I think, there's no way you've even read that manual, not a chance. And then we moved over to the yellow CPD, changed its guidelines a little bit. The amount of times I got a manual sent back and said, you need to include this, you need to include this. But another company, yeah, done. And I thought, you've not even had long enough to read that. How can you accredit something and you're telling that training provider, okay, that's all right to put out there, that then has a knock-on effect to the practitioner, that then the practitioners that have been educated well or they've grown within the industry over the years of experience are now knocking down these people that actually think that they're doing the right thing. There's no, so if you look at the Ofqual and other bodies like that, they're monitoring what training providers are putting out there. That needs to be done. It is like the Wild West right now.
Yeah,
and I think the problem stands way higher up than the practitioner.
Yeah, 100% agree with all of
that. Definitely. Fiona, what's your take on the situation from a business point of view?
Yeah, it's really interesting from my perspective, because obviously I'm not a clinician, I'm not an injector, I'm not a beautician or a skincare specialist. I just specialise in understanding how to run a really great skincare business or a really great clinical business, injecting or a combination of the two. And I agree that training is so varied, and it's almost the luck of the draw what training you end up with, because there are some training companies that shout very loudly about their training and it's not very adequate. There are some great smaller practices that are absolutely amazing, but they may not be very good at marketing themselves, so they actually don't say all of the right things to attract the right people in. And I think all of this comes down to regulation. In truth, I made a choice that I actually only work with medical professionals who do injecting. I work with great skincare therapists who don't do injecting but do all sorts of other things. But actually, people say to me all the time, is that because you think beauticians shouldn't be injecting, etc., etc.? And I say, actually, no, it's because I spend my life saying to people, pick your lane, choose a niche, go down a certain route. And that's one of the things I did. And with the background that I came from, it made more sense for me to go down that route. But the truth is, I know fabulous non-medical professionals who inject, I know fabulous medical professionals that inject, and I know shocking people on both sides. But I made a choice in my business for me. But I think the problem is, while regulation doesn't properly exist, while training providers aren't properly vetted, while qualifications vary immensely, even the regulated qualifications vary immensely, then all that does, it creates a world of division. It gives everybody an excuse to have a go at somebody else and, you know, shout that they're right and they're wrong. And all that does is it's just smoke and mirrors, isn't it? Because fundamentally, we actually just need to get down to brass tacks, work out what can you do, what can you do, how are you trained, you know, how can we measure your training, and then what are the ongoing regulations that you have to apply to your business, whether that's premises standards or, you know, licenses for this, that and the other, whether you're CQC registered, not CQC registered, all of those things. It needs to be a kind of a top to toe review on how everything from aesthetics to skincare and body treatments are put forward to the consumer, because ultimately we need to protect the consumer by regulation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my kind of thing that I'd add on to that, Fiona, would be when we talk about regulation, you're absolutely right. So obviously, apart from doing the accreditation, I obviously do regulated and unregulated qualifications, and you will see pros and cons on both. So whilst we're all saying yes, the industry needs to be regulated, it doesn't necessarily need to come from an Ofcom point of view. It can be an independent body that then says, going forward, accreditation companies must do XYZ. You know, insurance companies must follow XYZ and ensure that everyone is singing on the same hymn sheet. That's kind of where I've grown quite rapidly, because Dawn will know this is how we first met, isn't it, Dawn?
Yes.
that we kind of met through my company self-regulating. So I'm extremely passionate about high training standards and high standards to a T. So about 5-6 years ago, I decided to self-regulate and put my company on its own in the whole industry, and just kind of went from there. So whilst I think regulation is important, I think it should be regulated as a whole rather than just saying you must have an Ofcom regulated qualification. It needs to be regulated through the whole industry, if you like, to make it fair for everyone. But whatever the outcome is that we have from the government or whatever, it needs to include the insurance companies and the accreditation companies. It can't just target the practitioners. It needs to come from the training as a whole. Because as Victoria said, that is the heart of everything we do in our industry, comes down to the training. So if that's incorrect, then we're never going to get anywhere with the training or the practitioners being fully qualified to the extent that they need to be. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that.
No, I agree. I think, and I think that's one of the biggest things, is that that everybody talks about the practitioner themselves and how they run the business and what qualifications they have, and they don't go back to the first starting point, which is where did they get the qualifications from. But the truth is that I see so many people who talk about the different qualifications they have, and some of them, you know, obviously I'm not going to name names, but some of them you would think would be exceptionally good qualifications, but actually when I drill down and say, what did you learn when you did that qualification, it's shockingly weak. And so from somebody who doesn't have a clinical background of any type at all, I'm going, really? and I'm sitting there shocked. So I definitely think it's a root to tip situation. I think we need to look at every aspect of it, and actually then I think it would be lovely to have a place where everybody knows what they're doing, everybody can stay in their lane, and actually we can make it a nicer industry overall and take some of this backbiting that goes on, you know, and have an acceptance that everybody actually wants to make a living out of what they're doing. Most people go into the industry with really good intentions to serve the consumer very, very well. So how do we enable them to do that really overall?
Yeah.
When you look at the medic, non-medic disagreement, medics have so many things that they have to follow. They've got much more chance of losing their right to work. They have to follow their CPD hours per year. They've got overseeing bodies looking at everything that they're doing. So I understand when I don't agree with the way that things go about sometimes. I understand why there is this frustration when there is bad practice or people are cutting corners, because it's people that have not got this risk associated with not just their aesthetics business, but the clinical side that they come from as well. And I get that that must be so frustrating for medical professionals to look at that and think that I've got to do this to a T, otherwise I lose everything. You know, and I think that needs to be done. There needs to be, I know a lot of people that they sit on the basic course or their 5-day course that makes them all of a sudden an advanced practitioner, and then they don't do anything for years. And I think so much changes, there's constantly developments within the industry, within the medical field, as well as just aesthetics. You've got to stay on top of your game. And while ever there isn't that common ground that we have to adhere to, that we have to sit however many hours of learning a year, there's never going to be that common ground. That we're never going to bridge that divide between medics and non-medics to all just become aesthetics practitioners.
Interestingly, you know, all of those things you say, it also actually that feeds into the business side. So, for example, I talk to people about, you know, ASA standards and what you can talk about in terms of advertising and all of that kind of thing. And people say to me, I say, well, you absolutely can't advertise Botox. And, you know, even anti-wrinkle is being frowned all over these days. And you must do this and you must adhere to that. And of course, the medical professionals say, oh, absolutely, I'll lose my pin if I do it and try not to. But then they open up social media and see Botox three areas and they go, but why can everybody do it? And so I see it from a business point of view, from an actual making money point of view, that that there's all this panic and distrust that goes on because it feels like I can't do that because I'll lose my pin, but you can do that because you've got nothing to lose when doing it. So it's not, you know, there's not an easy fix to any of this, but I think we can definitely do better overall than you know, government have managed up to this point, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like we need like an independent like body, almost a bit like the ombudsman, if you like, that kind of, but not an ombudsman, but you know what I'm trying to say, like a completely independent body that comes in and kind of just says, doesn't matter whether you're medic or non-medic, these are the kind of rules, regulations that you must stick by. And then at least then everyone's kind of singing from the same hymn sheet. Because I mean, yeah, like from what Victoria said, it must be really frustrating for, you know, medics. They have to do things a certain way or they get stripped. Yet you could have, as you say, the way that the current climate is, you could have someone walking off the street just go and do an online course for 5 days, and then they're automatically assumed qualified to the same point, yet they have nothing to lose. So you kind of need to have that happy medium where everyone sings from the same hymn sheet.
I think it's frustrating that the JCCP seem to be the driving force. Get why they are. They're already a part of the industry. They've already made their mark on the industry. But because they are so medic-led, medic-focused, the non-medics are kind of getting pushed out a little bit. But I just don't see the feasibility of there being another body that's just going to come out the ground at this point to take over that role. So I think it's one of those things where you're just going to have to suck it up and sing to the tune.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? It's not just about the idea of having an independent body, it's also the logistics and the financial sides to it as well. And there's so many people out there that wouldn't want to put their name against it as well. But that's obviously an ideal situation.
An ideal situation will be everyone's happy, no one's, you know, biting at each other going, oh, you could have done this better. It's everyone's helping each other, and like, you know, at the end of the day, we can all have a cup of tea.
If only that could happen.
Hopefully we can work towards that, I think, in the coming years and stuff. But obviously stuff like that, especially big changes in it, it takes so long to implement. And obviously it depends on what the government does and puts in place that will then either alter that or could make things worse, but it could also make things better. So unfortunately it is a waiting game for everybody in the industry right now, which is, you know, very frustrating. My next point actually is, like, you know, what do you think the future could hold? You know, I mean, obviously again, this is speculation, we don't know for certain. I've not got some from the government whispering in my ear, or, you know, we'd be able to all have a good head start. But, you know, like, has anyone got any particular ideas about what could happen maybe in the next 5 years or so? Victoria, do you have anything?
I think at this point, I would be very confident to say that level 5 and level 7 will be compulsory. Luckily, from my understanding, we'll be protected by grandfather rights, giving us the time to adapt qualifications, training to that standard, so your business is not just going to get swiped from underneath you. I think there is next to no chance it will ever become just a medic led industry. It's not feasible. People are going to go to university to be doctors, nurses, that don't want to work in the NHS or don't even want to work privately in medical care. They're doing it to be an aesthetics practitioner. So what happens to sick people, I don't know. I just don't think that will ever be the case. But I do think that we're going to go down the level 5, level 7 route. And I think that it's going to stick with you qualify Ofqual, because I don't think it's feasible to bring in another body. And I would really hope that we're all forced to submit our CPD hours. We're all forced to sit at a certain part of our clinic and have spot checks through licensing, through the council and things like that. That's what I would like to see moving forward. We have stricter guidelines in how we practice. We see videos on all the time on Instagram of, there was one recently of a girl in a fur coat injecting, I don't know what she was injecting, there was a child running around and I'm like, oh my God. There was one girl straddling a friend doing Botox on Snapchat with no gloves on, and I'm like, oh my God. And I just hope it puts a stop to all of that. So I would love to see tight regulation from the council. But I do expect level 5, level 7 from a qualification point of view.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I mean, I definitely echo that. I think clarity around the qualifications you're supposed to have to offer certain levels of treatment, I think, would be an excellent way forward. I agree that that has to be led by training, scrutiny around training schools, and are the people who are doing the training, are they qualified to do the training? You know, what is it, a certificate of competence? Is it a certificate that you can actually do it? Is it an actual qualification? What is it that they're receiving from it? Can one practitioner just train another practitioner on a treatment and then get an insurance certificate, which I see all the time? You know, there are all sorts of things going on like that, which are very, very difficult to navigate. There's even confusion around, we talk about the local councils, you know, some local councils require you to have a license to do the treatments that break the skin, and then other councils don't require them to. Some councils do spot checks around, are you treating underage people? Other councils don't do spot checks around it. You know, there is no clarity around that at all. And actually, there are very few penalties when people get it wrong. And it's not that I want to go around penalising the world, but, you know, fining people and holding them to account does eventually get out there. More people that get held to account for the actions they take, the better that would be, because then people would realise it's not a quick fix. It's not just a quick way of making money. You actually can make very good money if you do it right. But more people don't make good money than do make good money. And I think if that was a more known fact, then it would be a less saturated market anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
just quickly add, so we follow the majority of what the UK does. We kind of were waiting for the UK to decide and then Gibraltar will follow on. But what we do, we have to be licensed for anything that breaks the skin. And they will happily just walk in the clinic at any given second, come and look in my fridge, come and look at how I'm working, look at anything I'm doing. If I'm doing it wrong, my license is gone. I can't practice anymore from that second. And I think that should be the case.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you can probably tell from my accent, I'm from Somerset. And here in Somerset, the regulation around licensing and stuff is completely different to loads of places in the UK. It depends on what kind of what borough you're in will depend on what your council will state for the licensing. So some might say yes, you need a license to break the skin, others might say no, you don't. Now I always say to people when they're asking me my advice, from like an accreditation point of view or a training point of view, I always say, just because those guidelines aren't there doesn't mean you don't have to follow them. Or if you want to be the best you want to be at your business and get the most out of things and really be proud about what you do, go above and beyond. Don't just settle for second best. Don't just settle for an AET teaching qualification, because that's the minimum foundation course. Go and get your level 5, you know, and things like that, I think, is where all of this stems from as well. It's like what we said earlier, it's about having the correct knowledge when you first enter the industry to then carry it on to other people. Because you can't do that if you don't have it yourself. Like, how, you know, I spent many years in the industry before I even began teaching, because I needed to know from every aspect on what I was doing before I could even go feel comfortable in teaching someone a subject. And I always say that to people, if you really want to be proud in this industry and you want to really make a difference for yourself, you need to know what you're doing. But you can't just, like Fiona said and like Victoria said, you can't just learn something from someone else and then expect to teach it the next day. But then I also think it comes from insurance companies as well that allow the trainer, they allow these people to sit an online training teaching qualification. Not that I have anything against them because I run them myself, but there are insurance companies within our industry that will allow someone to take a teaching qualification with no background knowledge at all, and then they can then go and get their teaching insurance online. And I think that's kind of where the issues have arisen as we become more technology based within the industry. You know, like everything's more online now, so everything's almost instant. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that.
That's an interesting point, because actually I just did a podcast with a pharmacy the other day, and I was talking to their superintendent pharmacist because I was trying to do some myth busting around what can you do, what can't you do, what are the regulations, you know, what kind of conditions do you have to keep things in once they've supplied you, you know, all of that kind of thing. But what's really interesting about pharmacies is over, especially I would say the last 18 months, 2 years, is they've really tightened up their game in terms of looking at their supply chains and who's prescribing for who and outcomes and things like people prescribing for, say, a family member without realising that you absolutely can't supply for it. You know, they're checking names on prescriptions and all of that kind of thing. And I was actually thinking, what a good thing it is, because if I'd have had that conversation 5 years ago, it wouldn't have been anywhere near as tight as the conversation I had this time round. And I was thinking it would be great if everybody suddenly felt this pressure to improve and up their game and do it right. So the onus is on every part of the industry to do it right. And that would be amazing if everybody took that. And I think technology has helped with that, because now there's no hiding under the covers, is there? There's no shuffling a bit of paperwork around and putting it underneath the pile. Everything is so visible. And I think that's a really good thing for people to realise, that everything is visible these days. So don't try and cut corners, because it will come and bite you on the bottom at a later stage if you keep cutting those corners, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I always believe in karma as well. But I think if you're really proud about your business and you really want to, you know, get yourself out there, the only way to do that is by not cutting corners and do your own due diligence and your own research to be the best that you can be. As I said, just because the absolute minimum to be able to teach and gain accreditation is to have an AET, why stop at an AET? Why not strive for more? But that's my take.
That's all right. That's what we're here for, isn't it? It's everyone's take. And, you know, like, we're all relatively on the same page, I think, as well. It's like, you know, we all just want the industry to be as best as it can be. We want everyone to do well. We're not just here to be like, no, I'm the best practitioner, I'm the best teacher. It's all about just wanting, having those good practices, then people can train up, feel good and confident, and then go out in the world without, you know, okay, there will be complications occasionally, you know, we're all human, sometimes something will go wrong that you just can't help but have that error. But, like, you know, being able to go out and be like, you know, I'm confident I can do this kind of injecting pattern, or I can do this, or I can do Cupid's bow lips, that sort of thing. It's kind of just having that, you know, everybody just wants everyone to do well at the end of the day.
Yeah. And it's also about not being scared or frightened to speak up and say, I need help. It's taken me a long, long time to realise that. And also, you know, just go in every day at your life being a sponge. I always say that. Just be a sponge, suck everything up that you can, and literally learn from every single kind of encounter that you come across, and put things into place to ensure it doesn't happen again, or if it does, you know how to then counteract it. But yeah, absolutely.
It's funny, I have a slightly different take on that as well, in the sense that I think it's really good that you're very passionate about the clinical training and all of that. Absolutely fundamental, no doubt about it. But you know what, I wish people spent more time kind of learning the business and the marketing when they start their business, because they push on and they get all this clinical training. They have no idea how to put it into practice and turn it into a meaningful business and market it. And the problem with that is then they've spent money on training, they've learned all these skills, and then they start to panic because they're not making money. And that's when I think cutting corners comes into things, and then them panicking about because one person can advertise Botox and they can't advertise Botox, and then they cut the prices there, and then, you know, this and that happens. And I think to myself, that's born of panic that they're suddenly so in the red, they don't know how to get out of the red, they've spent all this money, they can't work out how to get it back. And if people really empowered themselves to understand what goes into running a business and even a training school and all of those things, I think there'd be less panic rising, and then people's standards would stay quite high because they would, it sounds an awful thing to say, they would be able to afford to keep their standards high,
yeah,
because they could invest in more training and they could stay up with all the latest regulations. And I think most people do go into the industry with the best of intentions. I don't think there's huge, huge people that go into it to make mistakes and cut corners.
Oh, no.
But I do think people end up in a bit of a trap sometimes because they literally have spent thousands.
Yeah.
And they have no understanding of how to get those thousands back, do they?
No, and I think that's a really good point, because although there are some courses out there that teach you how to market your business, it's not actually running the fundamental basics of the business, it's just how to use social media, literally. Yeah. And that is the main focus. And let me just tell you, I've been in business for years and I am still shocking at social media, and that has not deterred my business. You know, well, shocking is probably an understatement, but you know, it's not the fundamental basis of my business, running my business and knowing my business and knowing what I'm doing and what my vision is how it's still coming. So yeah, I completely agree. It's about having, but then I suppose that person that's coming into the industry, spending the thousands, they also need to understand that they need to work at their business. It's not just going to fall to them on their lap. The amount of conversations that I have with people, they're like, oh, I'm accredited now. And then they'll email me a week later, I've got no students. Well, what are you doing? What marketing are you doing? What are you doing to get your business out there? Oh, well, I just thought they'd come to me because I said I was training. So
that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That
would be really nice. Just flock to you as soon as it's, you know, ready. It's like, oh, yes.
I know, how amazing. How amazing would that actually be? But realistically, there's two parts, isn't there? Like, you've got your practical kind of element where you learn your skills, but then also, I have this conversation with people all the time, running a business is not what people think. It is extremely hard, it is extremely tiresome, it is horrendous at all times, but it's also enjoyable when you get it right. That's how I'd explain it.
Well, and I think you're right about that, because I think the flow, you open up social media or anything and it talks about this financial freedom and this time freedom that everybody's supposed to instantly get when they go into business themselves. And you'll all know that you might get financial freedom in the long run and you might get time freedom in the long run, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. And that bit in between, you'll be working more hours and probably earning less money and spending all the money you do earn on more training. And you know, it's only after you've done that for quite a period of time that you can then start heading in that direction and going for that financial freedom and the big business. But if you don't understand how profitable you are, if you don't understand what an average sale is, if you can't do a cash flow, you know, if you can't do any of those things, then you're going to struggle to push your business forward. And then if you think that marketing is social media, you're going to struggle, because loves and likes do not mean leads, and people really struggle with that concept.
Yeah, it's even like people just understanding what a USP is. Like, there's so many people that don't even understand what a USP is. And I think it's really important that when you have this goal in your head that you want your own business, it's really important that you understand what your USP is and what your vision is and how you get there. You know, you can't, I don't know, people say to me all the time, how have you got your training business? How have you got your accreditation business? I'm going to go get one. Well, yeah, you can. There's no stipulations as to anyone. You know, anyone can actually set up an accreditation company. It's about how you market yourself and how you put your standards in place for those people that are coming to you. And that's what I mean with, you know, anyone can become an aesthetics practitioner, but just because you've got someone across the road from you who's doing it doesn't mean that you're going to be the exact same. You're two completely different people. Your USPs are going to be different. Your areas are going to be different. You're going to enjoy different elements of it. And that's what people really need to focus on. And there should be more of that in the industry, I think.
I completely agree with that. One of my favourite phrases is I say, are you a destination clinician? Because if you're not a destination clinician, you will not shine in the industry. You should be in the position that if there was somebody to the right of you and somebody to the left of you, your people are heading just for you because you're their destination. And, you know, if you're resonating with them and they're resonating with you, it won't matter if somebody's doing super cheap filler on one side or, you know, some odd new treatment on the other that has no basis in, you know, in fact at all. It won't matter because actually your people love you and there are enough of your people in the world to want to come to you to make you that destination clinician. But you have to work hard to be that person. It's fundamentals of any business, isn't it? Is, you know, who's your perfect person and what are you offering to your perfect person? But again, you're right, people don't spend as much time thinking about that as they do about the other things. And that unless you bring all of those skills together, you know, that you can't create a business that's viable. You just have some sort of expensive hobby instead of an actual thriving business.
Exactly. Like people come to you for you, you know. Yeah. No one's ever gonna, they're not gonna go to someone because they're the exact same. No one is ever the exact same. Everyone has their own personalities and their own kind of things that attract them to them, you know. I'm not for everyone. My personality can be a bit bold and a bit, you know, wavy at times, but it just shows how passionate I am and how I want to help and support people being where they need to be. But yeah, there is definitely a lot more could be done with that, I think, within the industry.
We should shout about it more. I think that's the thing. Shout about it more.
We will definitely all, I think, be shouting about it after today. So I think my final kind of question we're going to lead into is, you know, what can practitioners do in these certain times? Either maybe just reassure themselves or just give them like a firmer ground to be standing on when some changes do come into effect, which again, we don't know. We don't know how far away it's going to be or how close it is. But, you know, what can people do maybe starting from today that could help them in their business? Fiona, you are the business expert, so I'll start off with you.
Well, I think one of them we've just covered, which is nail your niche, understand who it is that you're offering it to, understand what they want and, you know, offer it to them in a very ethical way. I talk about sales a lot when I'm, because I really believe sales are the oxygen that, you know, make your business sing. If you don't have sales, then you're not going to get anywhere. But you have to understand what it is that you're offering to the person, what is it they want, and so nail your niche, really understand that. And then, you know, and on top of that, when I talk about ethical sales, that means staying compliant. It means not cutting corners. It means kind of adding value to what you're doing. Don't cut corners and cut your prices and go to the lowest common denominator. You know, sing out about what you're good at and do it in an ethical, compliant way. And then it actually doesn't matter what the future will hold, because if you have the right licensing in place, if you've gone that extra mile, if you've done the right training, then it's not going to rock your boat when they bring in regulations. You might have to do some tweaks and changes and a little bit of this, but ultimately you'll be up there while other people are really struggling still down there. So you'll be ahead of the game. So do that. Obviously, think about your personal brand as well as you're doing it. It made me smile when you said about, you know, you're not everybody's cup of tea, but actually that's a good thing. You don't want to be everybody's cup of tea, do you? You know, it's that thing of I'm not everybody's cup of tea, you know, and I kind of think that really doesn't matter, because those people who will be excited by what you've got to say and what you've got to offer will come to you. Of course they'll come to you. And anyway, I would say, you know, I don't want to work with anybody who doesn't want to work with me, because, you know, we wouldn't get each other, so there's no point. So, you know, people have to learn to build their brand, find their niche, and then on a really practical level, I obviously would say this as a coach, but invest in the skills you don't have. Business and marketing are not rocket science, but they do take time and energy. They take tenacity, they take consistency, you have to learn them. Most people don't have them in the bag, so you have to learn them. And things like knowing your numbers and understanding your profitability and doing a cash flow, they're not just nice to haves. They are fundamental parts of your business that will allow your business to sing and move forward and look at multiple layers of everything, because you need multiple layers of everything in your business so that if one falls off a cliff for whatever reason, you've got the other ones going, and then you sort out the one that's fallen off the cliff, and then something else will fall off the cliff because that's business. And if you've got multiple layers of everything, multiple layers of marketing, then you know your business will get there, because all you need to be is super brave, super consistent and flipping determined, and you will go in the right direction, but do it ethically and in a compliant way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Victoria, what's your nugget of advice that you would leave with people today?
Is knowledge is power, and it's something that nobody can ever take away from you. So yeah, you might be, do I go on that training course, do I not, is it going to be worth it? Whatever, you could sit the same training course 5 times, and each time you would still learn something new, because our brains can't possibly absorb everything. Yep. The first time we sit that course, the amount of anatomy courses I've sat is ridiculous, and every time I pick up something new. So even if you might not have to do your level 5 and level 7, but you're going to gain knowledge, you're going to gain skill from doing it anyway, so why not do it now before the big rush comes, if you do have to do it and the prices skyrocket? Yep. Because by putting, and I don't offer these courses, by the way, this is just my complete, the way that I'm thinking right now, because you're going to learn something from it anyway. You're going to improve your business. You're going to pick up better practice, because there are such strict guidelines with Ofqual and Qualify of what you have to learn. So why not? What will you lose by learning more? Nobody can ever take that knowledge from you.
Yep.
It's very true. Yeah, definitely. Rhian, what would you like to round off with?
So mine is literally a nice one to finish on. Just literally believe in you, believe in yourself. And I think once practitioners and people realise that they are the magnet to their own business, and people come to them for them because of their knowledge, their power, you know, their education, then I think everything else kind of, that Fiona and Victoria were saying, kind of falls into place. Obviously, there's a lot of hard graft behind it. But it's about knowing you and loving you and using you as your niche and your USP. That's where I'm at.
I think
once you kind of get that and you love what you do and you don't kind of get sucked in with social media, I think is another one. Don't get sucked in with the miscommunication, the misleading, and just do your own research. To, you know, to be where you need to be. But absolutely, like Victoria says, knowledge is power. You can never ever have enough knowledge. I'm still a student. On every week I enroll in a new course because I love to be a student. I love to learn more. I love to just constantly get as much knowledge as I can to then pass on to other people. You know, there's that kind of old sort of saying, yes, your qualifications are for life, but our industry is changes so much on a daily basis. You cannot go and say I qualified in 2009 and still expect to be to the industry standards. You have to constantly be going with your CPD, and that would be something that I would add off of the back of what Victoria said, is go and update your CPD. There is no reason why you can't do that. You know, if you can't afford to go and do level 5 and 7, fair enough, but there's loads of different seminars and webinars and podcasts and stuff like that you can go and listen to help with your CPD. And that would kind of be my main two nuggets to take from this, would be invest in yourself and love yourself, because if you're not confident about what you would do, then you can't expect other people to be confident about your work. And the other one would be to invest in your CPD, so invest in your own knowledge, because that's what puts you above the rest.
No, definitely as well. And I agree with all the points. They're absolutely amazing nuggets of advice. And I think, you know, as long as people, I think, follow his main points, you can't see why not, they can't keep carrying on practicing and being the practitioner when things do change and the government brings things in. So thank you so much for all of your knowledge today, guys. It's been absolutely amazing chatting with you on the 50th episode. I can't believe it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you to my guests today for chatting about the future of aesthetics on this very special 50th episode of the podcast. If you'd like to know more about our panelists, please check the links in the description. I have been your host, Dawn Cross, and tune in next week for another episode. InSync is one of the UK's fastest growing insurance providers, offering comprehensive cover for SMEs and the self-employed across the UK. Our expert team can tailor your insurance to meet your individual business needs and compare prices from our Lloyd's of London approved partners. We offer a 5-star service and have been FIFO Platinum Trusted winners 5 years in a row.